Wow, look at who we've got. All right, I'm going to call to order the Metro Council business meeting of July 11th, 2019. Councillor Chase is excused for family emergency. Otherwise, we have a quorum, and I'd like to welcome to the dais two distinguished individuals. First, we have Heidi Rahn, who is our interim acting chief operating officer. Thank you for being here. And also our new attorney, Metro attorney, Carrie McLaren. Thank you. Welcome. And then I will ask Councillor Gonzalez to do the safety briefing.
Please note that we're on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of this room. Go down the steps to the second floor and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue. A fire extinguisher is located in the corridor to the right of the dais as you leave the chamber.
Thank you. We do that at the beginning of every meeting because there are always new people here in the audience, and we much appreciate that. We want to make sure that you feel like you know what to do in the event of emergency, and also that there's an expectation that we start thinking about that for all of our community meetings and also just our office staff meetings so that everybody is aware of where they are in the building and what they would need to do, whether they are in the tower or whether they're in the basement. So thank you. I'll move on to public communication. If there's anyone who wishes to testify on a non-agenda item, now would be the time, and I would really appreciate it if you have not already filled out a blue card. You can hand it to the clerk. I have three people who are signed up, and the first one is John Charles. 3 minutes on the clock, and hello. Nice to see you.
Madam Chair, nice to see you. My name is John Charles, President of Cascade Policy Institute. I'm going to use my 3 minutes of fame here today to just introduce a report that I finished writing recently that I spent several years on called The New Sellwood Bridge, Promises Unfulfilled. It's actually about much more than the Sellwood Bridge. My points today are that 20 years ago, Metro released an analysis of future needs for river crossings. It was called the South Willamette River Crossing Study. Some people in the room here are very familiar with that study because they worked on it. And they forecasted that if no new crossings were, or no new bridge capacity was provided, that by 2015, traffic congestion for all bridges from the Markham Bridge all the way south to Oregon City would be congested at levels considered unacceptable or grossly unacceptable. And having decided that that would be that was the forecast, Metro Council did nothing and decided to just let the disaster unfold. They did look at about 18 different potential river crossings and decided to build nothing, or that no one would build anything. They would rely on transportation demand management and other strategies. We've done extensive monitoring on the new bridge since it was built, both before it, but especially after it was built. And sadly, the TDM strategy has failed. It doesn't really matter how much space you give to bikes and peds. In that particular corridor, there is no mode shifting. The mode split is essentially the same, if not worse, than it was before. So I have a couple of suggestions. One is that you should finish the work that the Metro Council 20 years ago started but didn't finish, which is to convene another study process and find a place somewhere between the Sellwood Bridge and Oregon City for a new river crossing. There is one study underway right now involving Clackamas County and Lake Oswego, and to some degree the city of Milwaukee, but that is for a bike-ped crossing only. I have nothing against that, but that's not going to solve the problem. So I think you need to do the heavy lifting here and find another start process for another crossing. And second, you need to encourage TriMet to restore the service that they had before buses were taken off the Sellwood. Despite an increase in their operating resources of almost 100% in real terms over the last 20 years, their service today is far inferior to what it was before. And when I asked them about this in the process of the paper, they said, well, we don't put more buses on the bridge because it's too congested. Well, that's a circular argument. If it's congested and buses are supposed to be part of the solution, but you don't put bridges, bus service out there because it's too congested, well, then transit isn't going to be part of a solution. You have a lot of influence with TriMet. I'm sure you could help persuade them to restore all-day service and weekend service. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. We have a lot of heavy reading to do. Next, we have Jim Kepner.
I've got some handouts here, so I think I'll... My name is Jim Kepner. I live in the metro area, and more specifically is Washington County. I was here in April and presented two proposals in writing, and you're getting both the writing, and I've added some. Is this mic? Yeah, there we are.
Yep, you're good.
I added some diagrams. The first one is a little bit of homework that I did regarding the interstate bridge, and then further on down we'll talk about a potential bypass bridge west of the railroad bridge. But in looking at the math capacity, in 2014 you said there's about 130,000 vehicles. Let's say today there's 150,000 and 20% are trucks. So you're dealing with about 30,000 trucks that go across. And that's describing the left-hand side, which shows the existing bridge. If you look forward to going from 6 lanes to 9 lanes, you move the 30,000 trucks over to a north and south through for trucks, which then leaves you 6 lanes for cars and small trucks. So the currently 120, and you would be then adding 60,000 cars because a truck potentially would take two vehicles kind of thing. So you'd end up with 180,000 capacity for small trucks and 30,000 for large trucks, which would give you 210,000 capacity. And I think that would more than adequately in the short term solve your problem. And the simple solution as compared to the complex one is that you would just add a identical third span. So I just wanted to share, I'm not trying to give the details, but just share that, because that tells me that the next challenge is to put a third corridor between Clark County and Washington County. And if you look at the third page down, some of you may have seen this, but in 2008, Clark County put together a study which shows a bridge from western Clark County across the Columbia River and, interestingly enough, across the Willamette River to Highway 30, which now in 2016, through the state of Oregon, Washington County has a futures plan, which I'm sure most of you are aware of, and has a northern corridor subject. And that has both a freeway from the city of Hillsboro north through a tunnel into Highway 30. So both studies, the 2008 in Clark County and this, have an identical bridge. So I'm trying to get collaboration between those two jurisdictions, which is a challenge. So hopefully you'll take my joining together on collaborating two jurisdictions. And I call it the 3x3x3 study, which is a third span and a third corridor. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for the information. All right, we have one more person who's signed up for public comment, Art Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Council. I'd like to say when I testify before you that I support Metro. I'm don't jump to the worst conclusions about the issues that you deal with here and your service to the community. When I come, I try to add to the conversation. I've asked for a review of this 14-page pamphlet from Metro and City Hall, and they refuse. But that's not why I came today. It does show that on the front that I-5, to me, is shovel-ready, that we have enough salvage of that project to start that project as soon as possible. And but today I want to share about the recent release of a subway plan for the MAX line that you're now studying, and I've been working on an alternate subway plan for the last 4 years, and I've submitted it to you. Early definitions are in the pamphlet, and when you come out with a new design, I thought maybe I could work with you, and I found that I can. So I chose the NATO Parkway for the alignment north and south through town because I believe it is the one that is most earthquake resilient. And I include on my designs here what Seattle did or didn't do with its waterfront, which I thought would make the strongest seawall. Good afternoon, Lynn Peterson. I know you're involved in that project. So the idea with doing the same thing on the waterfront in Portland is to divide those weakest waterfront soils from the soils further in town. You contain them within the waterfront. And that, I think, is the right thing to do. By working with the Jefferson Street alignment, I've got a plan that's not only faster through town east and west, it's faster through town north and south. In the design, I show that the orange lines remain, the orange and yellow lines, the yellow line remains on the steel bridge, the orange line and the yellow don't pass through town. They turn around, and the faster way to get through town is on that green line through town. It's that many shores. So rather than extend any either of those two through town, they would turn around according to the way I'm looking at doing it. I think with this design also, you're avoiding a lot of construction disruption by tearing up Pine or Courthouse Square. And you can see the descriptions that I expect you all will review, have a look at, think about, and grant a review. Because...
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing that information.
One last point, no.
No, can you come back another time? We've
pretty
got
close.
A full agenda.
I did finish enough.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk later. All right. And if there's, again, anybody who's willing or wanting to comment on a non-agenda item, this would be the time. And seeing none, I will close out the public communications portion of the agenda. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of two items. Resolution number 19-5001 for the purpose of adding or amending existing projects to the 2018-21 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program involving four projects impacting Portland, SMART, and TriMet. And number two, consideration of the council meeting minutes for June 20th, 2019. Do I have a motion?
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Second it.
Been moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Gonzalez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We have our first resolution today. Our first resolution is number 19-4997 for the purpose of approving the Housing Authority of Washington County's request for an affordable housing bond measure phase one project concept endorsement. We have Emily Lee from Metro Housing Bond Program for a presentation. Thank you, Emily. Am I on now?
Oh, great.
Oh,
thank you.
There we go.
Okay.
Sorry, everyone.
We can hear you now. Hello, Council President Peterson and councilors. I'm excited to be here today on behalf of the housing team with two resolutions for your consideration. Both are concept endorsements of our final two phase one projects for the housing bond. And I want to thank the housing team here today who helped to put these reports together. We've been moving quickly through this phase one process while we are still in the process of getting our systems up and running to move these phase one projects forward, and really appreciate everyone on the team has been involved in that effort. And I also want to acknowledge that we have some partner staff here today from Home Forward, one of the two projects that you will be considering. As you recall, when the council adopted the work plan back in January, we also discussed what we've been calling phase one projects. And this is a path for up to one project per eligible implementation jurisdiction to move forward prior to the completion of a full local implementation strategy, which will be the work that is coming to you very shortly, starting on August 1st. You will be considering local implementation strategies between August and November of this year. Because the phase one projects are being submitted before that full plan has come to the Metro Council for approval, we're asking the council to take action on these phase one projects only. In the future, once those local implementation strategies are adopted, the work plan authorizes staff to endorse projects and authorize funding on the basis of consistency with the council-approved work plan. So today I'm going to provide an overview of each of the projects associated with the two resolutions before you. And at the end of the second one, I have a roundup of where we're at in terms of the four phase one projects that have come forward, which will complete our phase one project submission. And I'll save that for the end. So the first resolution before you is for a project that was submitted by the Housing Authority of Washington County, and it's an early development concept that will undergo further planning and due diligence prior to coming back to us for full funding authorization next year. The project is located at the corner of 72nd Avenue and Baylor Street in the Tigard Triangle. It's close to two future Southwest Corridor light rail stations and also close to frequent bus service on 99W, and there's work underway with the City of Tigard to make some sidewalk improvements on 72nd Avenue to connect to that bus service. The City of Tigard is providing an SDC waiver. Washington County is providing property tax exemption. That SDC waiver is a new policy that's been put in place by Tigard, and one of many tools they are using to try to incentivize and stimulate housing development and affordable housing development in the triangle. And the building's located across the street from an established grocery store, which is something that's been showing up in our community engagement conversations as a priority for where affordable housing is sited. The project will be developed by Community Development Partners, CDP, which is an experienced developer with over 19 projects in four states. The CDP recently hired Jessica Woodruff, who was formerly leading development at Reach CDC. And Bremick Construction has been selected as the project's GC, and they have there's a goal associated with the project of 20% MWESB participation, which is in line with the goal in the draft local implementation strategy that Washington County has submitted and that will be coming to you for consideration later this month. The proposal is for an 80-unit building, of which 55 of the units would be family-sized 2- and 3-bedroom units, and 33 of the units would be affordable to households earning less than 30% of area median income. And there's a chart on page 7 of Attachment 1 in your staff report that will show you how that tracks in terms of the county's overall production goals and the bond resource allocation available to them. But Basically, it is around 10% of total unit production and right on track with that in terms of the resources that they're allocating to it. It's slightly overperforming in its family size unit production. That's 13.5% of their total family size unit goal being fulfilled through this project. So by endorsing this concept, the council will be providing a preliminary commitment of $11,440,000 in Metro Housing Bond funds to support the construction of this apartment building in Tigard. Final approval would come back to us in 2020, and construction completion is anticipated for fall of 2021. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions on this project proposal?
This project. And
Councillor Lewis.
You may have said it. There's weatherization dollars that are being leveraged. Who are the weatherization dollars from?
I believe those come from the state. There is a, let me double check my sources and uses. Yes, those come from the state.
Dollars. Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
That the Todd program helped identify the site.
Awesome. Any more questions on this proposal?
No questions.
All right. Let's move on to the next one. Yeah, just excited. We're just excited up here.
That's awesome.
This is time for comments as well, not just
questions. Yeah, Councillor Dirksen.
Well, I'm very excited to see this project go together. This is the third major project to break ground in the Tigard Triangle just in the last year. This project, with its affordable housing, is actually adjacent to another project that's under construction at the present time that's market-rate housing, also larger-scale multifamily housing. And so it represents not just progress in implementing our affordable housing bond, but it's also the fruition of years of thoughtful local planning efforts to make the Tigard Triangle ready for redevelopment, new development, housing development, including appropriate affordable housing. The city of Tigard has really stepped up as a full partner in affordable housing, even though they aren't a housing authority, but with their newly reconstituted policy, which I had originally done when I was mayor, of waiving SDCs for affordable housing projects, and that has been put back in place by the current council. As you know, the Southwest Corridor light rail will one day soon stop just a few blocks away from this building. And this is what it means to coordinate our region's investments in different areas for maximum public benefit. So congratulations to all of the partners on this for working quickly to identify and support the project. So I look forward to a ribbon cutting in the near future.
Next year.
Yeah.
Councilor Gonzalez?
I know we have another presentation, so I'll say the exact same thing, but it's amazing that 8 months ago we passed this bond and we continue to inject not only money but hope for so many residents in the region. So it's wonderful across all levels, and I'm glad that it's been 8 months since we passed it, and we're almost at 10% of our goals across the region. So well done, Emily and team. Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. Next, should we go through the second one and then action at the same time?
I think we can do them one after another.
Yeah, okay. So the second phase one project concept for your consideration today is a proposal to redevelop Deakum Court, an existing public housing site with 40 units of housing built in 1972 and owned by Home Forward, the housing authority for Multnomah County. The site has been determined to be obsolete and has been awarded federal project-based rental assistance vouchers to support the redevelopment and operation of the existing 42 and 3-bedroom units currently occupied on the site. Home Forward is requesting a preliminary reservation of $22,894,240 in Metro Housing Bond funding to support construction of an additional 160 units of affordable housing on top of the replacement of the existing 40 units already on the sites for a total of 200 units that will be on the site. 160 of those will be counted toward our Metro Bond targets. These units would be distributed across approximately 8 3- to 4-story buildings. The site is in the process of being rezoned through the City of Portland's Better Housing by Design code update project, which is expected to be adopted this fall. With the passage of the constitutional amendment in November, along with the bond, the eligibility of cities became eligible to participate as alongside housing authorities. And so within our allocation framework, Home Forward is covering the balance of Multnomah County not covered by the cities of Portland and Gresham. The City of Portland and Gresham, or City of Portland and Home Forward, have an agreement under which the City of Portland will be transferring this portion of its unit targets and housing bond resources to Home Forward to support this Phase 1 project that had already been identified back in the fall before we knew the outcome of the constitutional amendment as a project that they wanted to start working on moving forward. And we provided a small grant in the fall to support some of that early planning work for the Phase 1 project. So as you'll see in the chart on page 3 of the staff report, this project will achieve 59% of Home Forward's adjusted its new unit production target, 58% of its deeply affordable unit target, and 59% of its family-sized unit target, while utilizing 59% of the bond subsidy reserved for Home Forward's implementation. Home Forward has been actively partnering with the early learning program at Fabian Elementary and Concordia's 3 to PhD program, which is a really innovative program leveraging all of the investment that's gone into that elementary school. To ensure that both the existing children who live at the site are able to stay have stable housing throughout the redevelopment process, and also that all of the new families and children who will live in the future buildings will be served by those programs. The design will also accommodate an Albina Head Start facility on site, so really a seamless from the childcare on site to the partnership with the elementary school nearby. Some good thinking and partnerships around how to serve families and children. Home Forward has a very robust engagement plan that includes the creation of a community advisory committee, which is something they do across all of their development projects. And that committee will include a current resident. The project and Home Forward's local implementation strategy will both be subject to Home Forward's existing equitable contracting and workforce policies, which include 20% COBIT or MWESB participation for contracts over $200,000 and 20% goal for apprenticeship hours with specific goals for women and people of color. By endorsing this concept, Metro Council will be providing a preliminary commitment of $22,894,240 in Metro Housing Bond funding, which is contingent upon further planning and adoption of the zoning code update in Portland. Assuming the timeline remains as planned, Phase 1 construction would be in early 2022, and Phase 2 completion would be fall of 2023. So just a reminder again, these projects, and especially a big and complex redevelopment like this, do take time. So these projects are coming to you at a very early phase. Because this is the final project to be completed as part of the four Phase 1 projects, we wanted to bring you a roundup of all four projects. These are the first two that have already been approved or endorsed by the council: Marianne Apartments in Beaverton, the acquisition of a site in Clackamas County, and now with these two projects, Home Forward on the left and the 72nd in Baylor, we now have at least one project in all four counties. Just a reminder, these are preliminary renderings, not full architectural drawings, so there will be windows in the building. just to take a quick look at where that puts us in terms of our overall targets and overall bond funding. As Councilor Gonzalez mentioned, we are now getting close to 10% of our goals in terms of having units in pre-development. I think we're just under 9%, tracking just under 9% on both our unit production goals and the funding that's been allocated. 339 units total as part of phase one. We'll continue to be bringing this dashboard through to you throughout implementation, and I think we're looking at a way to get it up on the website and shared with folks who are interested in seeing it. So I'm happy to take any questions about either the projects or phase one.
So on the Deakin project, just want to say thank you to Home Forward and the partnership that we have and all the work that went into getting us to this point. Councilor Lewis.
So I'm going to do my best to channel Councilor Chase in speaking to the Deakin Court project, since I know it's something he's given considerable thought and excitement towards. But given the North Portland history of displacement in North and Northeast, it's exactly the kind of affordable housing development and investment that we need at this time. And Home Forward is a tremendous partner, so thank you to them. We know that we can trust them to do this right, which I think is why we were able to do that shift between Portland and Home Forward. By redeveloping the site over time, we are going to ensure that none of the existing families, the 40 families on site, are displaced during the construction, and that each of these families will soon be moving into a better and stronger home, one that's earthquake resilient, energy efficient, and will last generations. So that's really exciting. But then some of the comments that you made about the partnerships, particularly when you look at the CAC and how community will be able to lead, but also connections to Fabian Elementary and Concordia College. This is just an ambitious and exciting plan to have the programmatic elements to support residents of the building. And then we can't lose sight of the fact that this project will bring an additional 160 families into the service-enriched neighborhood. So that was my best, Councilor Chase. He would have done it better, but I am just wanting to speak a little bit more broadly to both of these projects before us today, but to the four pilot phase one projects overall, the excitement that I have and how quickly we're able to move and how ambitious our local partners are being. As you know, affordable housing used to come with significant investment from the federal government, but they have stepped back from their commitments to our local communities in this manner. And I'm proud of our local housing authorities for really stepping up, calling the question on what communities need, working with communities, and making sure that their residents are able to find places to live in this region. We'll finally be able to protect the existing tenants through some of the work being done in these pilot projects while creating more affordable homes and redevelop and really piloting redevelopment. So this is regionalism at its best, and this is a good day for Metro.
Awesome. Councillor Stacey and then Councillor Craddock.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam President. And thank you, Councillor Lewis. I thought it would be appropriate for somebody to channel Sam Chase, but you had notes and everything. So I'll hold myself to a question just for my own understanding. Ms. Liebue explained that in this wonderful act of collaboration, Portland Housing Bureau, City of Portland, and Home Forward realigned resources, with Home Forward utilizing resources that were its under the measure. Would you re-explain that for me, please? Looking for is some assurance that both the balance of Multnomah County served by the Housing Authority, Home Forward, and the City of Portland itself will still have robust targets and opportunities for investment of bond dollars.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the Home Forward will still have the allocated share of funding for serving the balance of the county not served by Portland or Gresham. And they've been they have engagement underway with Fairview and Troutdale to develop a plan for what will likely be 1 to 2 projects Great. In those areas. The city of Portland has substantial resources that will still be supporting their local implementation. They were at 45% based on our formula of assessed value being the formula for distributing. And so there, it's just a small portion of that which has been transferred to Home Forward to support this Phase 1 project located in the city of Portland that had been identified and moving forward as a Phase 1 project. So,
thanks very much. Yeah, I agree with Councillor Lewis. This shows great momentum for the affordable housing program generally and a high degree of coordination and cooperation among the entities and agencies and governments that are our partners.
Thank you. I have three questions and then I have a statement to make. Regarding the Home Forward project, so the they're taking thank you, Home Forward, by the way, for mm-hmm. taking advantage of the properties that you already have and redeveloping them. This really is an opportunity to leverage the resources of Home Forward along with the funding that Metro has available, and it's, we're going to even be able to hopefully build more housing than we had expected because of that. So that it's very creative, and thank you very much. The question I have is actually around transit. So tell me, you mentioned in your document that it's close to 2 transit lines. Can you, how close is it? I wasn't able to determine that from, go back to your.
Yeah. Oh, were you talking about the Tigard project or?
The Forward project.
The Forward project.
And the Broadway bus.
Yes, it is. I'm trying to remember the number of the
Decom
bus line, but it does have a frequent service bus that that
it goes right through the property.
One of these days we're going to have money to make the Broadway Holgate bus frequent service too.
Yes. It's the number 75. I used to write it. I should remember.
Yeah. And it's really close to the property then, the transit line. Is that correct?
One block.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The question I have then is, I assume that is something that you're looking at as proposals come forward about how close these transit lines are, the existing transit lines, so that people that live here really have good access to transit. And I assume that you took that into consideration when you were having the discussion about this property.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's something all of the partners are taking into consideration. And our work plan asks each implementation partner to be thoughtful and to develop some criteria around how they are selecting locations. So that's something that will be described in each of the local plans, and I think you'll very consistently see access to transit as a criteria that is being considered. And it's something that you'll see in the implementation strategy for Metro's site acquisition plan as well. So
thank you. Now, so the opportunity this has is you're going to, triple, I think, the housing that's available there. It's a significant amount of housing going from the current units that will be deconstructed and then the new ones. And so this is a significant amount of housing that's going to become available. One of the reasons why I voted for this program and supported it is it's creating the opportunity to have affordable housing throughout the entire region, more of it. And so I assume that as we move forward, we're looking at looking at the larger regional map and standing back and saying, okay, here's housing here, here's housing there. You are kind of looking at it in a geographic way too. Is that correct? Because this gives us an opportunity to build a lot of housing in one location, but it isn't the it's one of those situations where there's not a large distribution of housing over a larger geographic area. So that's a question.
Yeah, well, I would say, so the work plan that was adopted by the council set policy for how resources are being allocated to the counties, and we've asked the partners within each county to determine whether they will also use that assessed value method of distributing investments. Beyond that, what our work plan states is that each partner's local implementation strategy should have a location strategy that considers geographic distribution of investments, access to opportunity, strategies to address racial segregation, and strategies to prevent displacement and stabilize communities. So there are kind of a range of factors described there, and we think there will probably be some similar themes in terms of what you see, but I think the intention was to provide flexibility for each partnering jurisdiction to describe what a thoughtful location strategy looks like in their jurisdiction. Those plans will come to the Metro Council for consideration, and then beyond that, the work plan describes that Metro staff's role in evaluating each project will be to confirm that it's consistent with what was in that locally adopted plan. So that is the point at which I think the location strategy will be most fully described.
Thank you. That's excellent. Thank you. And then the final question I have is, so we have four projects moving forward, which is remarkable. We really should be very pleased and all smiling up here, because that's really quite significant that within 8 months that you already are moving forward four projects. So thank you. And thank you to all those out there that in our partners to help make this happen. But now there's two partners that are not yet have projects moving forward. It's Gresham and Hillsboro. So how will they work into this phase one plan?
So the phase one was always intended to be optional, and for jurisdictions that had a site that was readily identified, ready to go. Two of our four phase one projects do involve sites that at least some portion or all of the site being publicly owned. So that's kind of a unique opportunity. In the case of Clackamas, it was an acquisition. So it was never an expectation that every partner would submit a phase one project. We know both of those jurisdictions are moving forward with a local implementation strategy and plans to start the project selection process after that. So.
Thank you. This is really quite remarkable, and I will say thank you very much. It's really pleased. So, and thank you to the partners that are working with us to help make this happen. So, thank you,
Councilor Gonzalez.
Well, thank you once again. I have a question after looking at page two. It's just more of my curiosity. So, I know that for affordable housing projects, the partners work really hard to identify the funding stream sources and how you make a project work. So specifically on the new unit development for the 160 units, I noticed that for the 30% AMI units, there weren't any project-based vouchers. So how are we able to how did we piece together the funding to make that happen without a project-based voucher?
Well, I think what you're seeing in this project specifically is some cross-leveraging that is being achieved through the other 40 project-based vouchers that are supporting the replacement units. Those are still part of the total project financing, and because of this unique situation where those projects are able to be fully supported by the vouchers, there's some cross-leveraging that is supporting the rest of the project. We may or may not see other projects that are able to support that number of, you know, it's unlikely that we would see other projects that are able to support that level of deeply affordable units without any vouchers at all. So I think that is what is unique in this situation.
Thank you.
Just one quick question. You didn't mention the DBE commitment on this project.
For Home Forward's project? Mm-hmm. So they have an existing agency policy of 20% MWESB and also 20% apprenticeship hours. And both of those goals, I understand, are going to be incorporated into their implementation strategy as well.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. With that, are we ready to proceed with the adoption of the resolutions. With
I move we adopt Resolution 19-4997, approving the Housing Authority of Washington County's request for a concept endorsement of their Housing Bond Measure Phase 1 project.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Craddock. All those in and the clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Council President Peterson.
Aye. Mm-hmm. And it passes. Thank you. Councillor Dirksen, would you like to do the second one?
Certainly. I move approval of Resolution Number 19-5007 for the purpose of approving Home Forward's request for an Affordable Housing Bond Measure Phase 1 project concept endorsement for Northeast Deakum Street.
Second.
Been moved by Councillor Dirksen and seconded by Councillor Lewis. The clerk will call the roll.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Council President Peterson.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have to remember to take that mental note to congratulate ourselves and be happy. So we'll move on. We have a final resolution today. Resolution number 19-4989 for the purpose of adopting the Gabbert Butte Master Plan. We have two folks. Do we have two or more? I'm checking. We got Dan and Elena?
Elena,
sorry, for presentation.
Council President Peterson, members of the Metro Council, my name is Dan Moeller, Conservation Program Director for Metro Parks and Nature. Joining me today is Elena Tarula, Senior Planner for Parks and Nature. We're here to present two projects, the Connect with Nature Project and the Gabbert Butte Master Plan. The Connect with Nature Project created a new approach to the way that Metro engages with the community to plan parks and natural areas. It emphasizes engaging with and listening to the needs and desires of communities of color and questioning our standard practices and assumptions. The resulting Connect with Nature report will serve as a resource for Metro, other agencies, and community organizations throughout the region to conduct a more inclusive and meaningful planning process. The Gabbert Butte Master Plan proposes new formalized access to Gabbert Butte Nature Park in Gresham. Using the Connect with Nature approach, the community shaped a vision for trails, parking, and park amenities that will serve the local and regional communities. Elena Tarula, the project manager for Connect with Nature and the Gabbert Butte Master Plan, will present more information on each project for your consideration.
Is this on?
Yes.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Council President Peterson and Metro Councilors, for the opportunity to share these two projects with you today. We're here to ask Council to adopt the Gabbert Butte Nature Park Master Plan and to highlight the Connect with Nature project, which led community outreach for Gabbert Butte planning. One takeaway from these projects is that how you approach community engagement shapes the result. Therefore, as we present this work, we'll share the Connect with Nature project first, followed by the master plan for Gabbert Butte. Data show that people of color don't benefit equitably from the region's parks, trails, and natural areas. The Connect with Nature project put into practice the idea that if people of color are included in the planning and decision making, they will share in the benefits that result. The Connect with Nature project engaged with people of color to understand how parks and natural areas could be more welcoming and better meet the needs of people of color in the region. The Connect with Nature report documents the approach to engagement as well as what we heard about parks and natural areas. Connect with Nature has impacted the work of Parks and Nature and is reflected in the department's Racial Equity Action Plan, in addition to in the Gabbert Butte Master Plan. From project initiation through development of the Connect with Nature Resource Guide, the project was led by community organizations serving people of color. The project committee, representatives of culturally specific community organizations, had a vision that was bigger than simply hosting workshops to identify barriers that people of color face when visiting parks and natural areas. The committee challenged Metro to turn the typical business model of planning parks on its head. And two key ideas became the guiding vision for Connect with Nature. First, let community lead. Second, identify and change the barriers in the business practices that continue to exclude people of color from participating in Metro's work. Responding to the committee's recommendation, we tried new ways to center community voice in the process. The Connect with Nature Project team, a coalition of community organizations and consultants, was led by an organization serving people of color. Community leaders were paid to recruit participants and facilitate the workshops. And for the first time at Metro, stipends were offered for committee members' time and expertise, which led to new processes being developed within the agency. The project team led a series of multilingual workshops to explore people's values and experiences of nature and the outdoors. Participants explored design elements for Gabbert Butte as well as for park features that could be implemented region-wide. Workshop participants were from African American, Latinx and Indigenous communities, African, Asian, and Slavic immigrant communities, as well as emerging leaders and youth of color. The Connect with Nature report shares what we heard in these conversations, but it is not intended to generalize about the needs and preferences of people of color. Rather, it should be used as a resource for future conversations. We began each conversation by asking people to share a nature object. One workshop started with a participant picking up a piece of basalt. She said, "I chose this rock because nature is the foundation. Everything comes after that." When asked, "How might we make natural areas more welcoming?" one group designed their perfect picnic shelter. One group talked about a place to have a moon viewing festival. And a third suggested that park kiosks include welcome in many languages. In talking with recent immigrants, we heard many stories about how exploring the local landscape helped make Oregon feel like home. We heard from people for whom growing gardens, camping, or hiking helped them begin to set roots here. We also learned that understanding park rules is important for people to feel comfortable and relaxed exploring new places. Workshop participants visited Gabbert Butte and reflected on the question, "What would it take for you to bring your family here? Keeping my family safe, having activities for all generations to participate in, and knowing what to expect before getting to a park were critical factors." Later workshops focused on proposed design ideas, this time asking, "If we build this at Gabbert Butte, would you bring your family here?" And one participant's response was particularly impactful. When evaluating several design ideas, she explained that one design was her least favorite, but she said, "If that's what gets built, I will definitely bring my family because I helped make it happen." When reflecting on the overall process, one participant shared that she had gained confidence to get involved in other agencies' park work. Another participant appreciated when staff spent less time explaining and more time just listening to what people of color have to say. The Connect with Nature report documents themes, details, and stories like these. It also shares the project's engagement approach and lessons learned. This report is not a shortcut through community engagement. Rather, it is a resource to improve future engagement, more effectively build community trust, and engage in more informed and more nuanced conversations. So now I will turn your attention to the Gabbert Butte Master Plan. I will introduce the site, touch on the broader community engagement, and finally share the Nature Park's vision and the master plan proposal. Metro and the City of Gresham both own land within the project area, and Gabbert Butte Master Plan was developed in partnership with the city. And I want to take up a moment to acknowledge City Planner Tina Osterink, who's here with us today to support the project. Gresham City Council unanimously adopted the Gabbert Butte Master Plan in June. On this map of the Portland region, you can see the Columbia and Willamette Rivers, the Tualatin Valley, and Portland Basin, which shape the regional landscape. You can also see the cluster of buttes known as the East Buttes, a group of ancient lava domes spanning East Multnomah and Clackamas County. Gabbert Butte is one of these buttes. For the next slide, we'll focus in on the area within the white square. This map shows Gabbert Butte outlined in black. The areas shaded green show the voter-protected land. The city of Gresham passed the region's first open space bond measure in 1990, and Metro passed two voter-approved bond measures in 95 and 2006, resulting in over 1,000 acres of protected habitat in the East Buttes. More recently, thanks to regional voters' approval of two operating levies, the agencies have worked together to continue to protect habitat and water quality and to create places for people to experience nature. For people, the buttes are an important scenic resource that contribute to the unique character of the landscape and the sense of place in East Multnomah and Clackamas counties. For wildlife, the buttes provide important habitat and connectivity in a growing part of the region. They contribute clean, cool water to Johnson Creek, support native fish, and help to mitigate the effects of climate change. Even as new neighborhoods grow, views of these protected buttes make the area feel like the foothills of the Cascade Mountains. These forests are great opportunities for improved trail connectivity and to experience nature close to home. Gabbert Butte, shown here in dark green, sits between residential neighborhoods to the east and west and public land, shown in darker gray, to the north and south. Today, there are about 1.5 miles of trails on Gabbert Butte, which can be accessed from neighborhood trailheads. There are no restrooms or parking, and only very basic rules and wayfinding signs. Existing trails are steep in some places and can be difficult to walk on. There is a need for better connectivity to nearby neighborhoods, trails, and natural areas. The vision for Gabbert Butte is a nature park that welcomes all cultures, communities, and abilities in the region, while enhancing neighborhood identity, provides meaningful experience of nature in a way that continues to protect water quality and wildlife habitat, and celebrates the unique qualities of Gabbert Butte. We talked to nearly 300 people at open houses, workshops, and meetings, and received about 450 survey comments. Connect with Nature participants sat on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee along with neighborhood representatives, natural resource experts, and trail advocates. Overall, the majority of comments and interactions were positive, with overwhelming support for the proposed master plan. Throughout the process, we worked to balance different perspectives and ensure that the plan responds to and has the support of the community. We have heard a lot of interest in creating a network of trails that enhance connectivity for walking and cycling. We heard about trade-offs between new trails and protecting forest, wetland, and amphibian habitat. We also heard concerns about multi-use trail and the importance of feeling safe while visiting the nature park. Through the design and construction process, we will make sure all improvements protect habitat and visitor safety and create enjoyable experiences for visitors. A new parking lot and day use area are proposed off of Regner Road. The area is shown in light green on the right side of the map. A network of family-friendly trails will connect between the day use area, existing trails, and surrounding neighborhoods. Existing trails that are steep and poorly sited will be rerouted to be safer, more enjoyable, and easier to maintain. And the project will fix erosion trouble spots and make trails a better overall experience. The trail plan provides a variety of challenge levels, from places to sit and enjoy wildlife to an all abilities and ages walking path and opportunities for longer and more challenging hikes or bicycle rides in the nature park. The plan also supports the city's active transportation goals by providing east-west walking and bicycle connections. Looking more closely at the day use area, parking is proposed for about 20 cars. The proposed day use area includes picnic shelters, restrooms, and flexible spaces that can accommodate formal programs or family activities. Smaller spaces for resting or reflection, or that can be used for spiritual practice, are proposed nearby. Features like these, as well as multilingual signs and places to heat up or keep food warm, were identified during the Connect with Nature workshops. If Metro Council chooses to adopt the master plan, Metro will lead the development of the nature park in partnership with the City of Gresham, and Metro will be managers of the nature park. Next steps include working with a consultant team to produce construction documents and pursue land use and site development permits from the city. The first phase of construction could take place as early as 2021 and would include the installation of parking and the amenities critical to safety and enjoyment of the site, like restrooms, automatic gates, improvements to existing trails, and critical trail connections. To conclude, we would like to thank Council for your support through this planning effort. Gabbert viewed as a legacy of the investments that voters have made over the past two decades, and this master plan and the Connect with Nature's project approach to community engagement sets the stage for Gabbert Butte to be a nature park, to that park that is loved by future generations. With that, we'd be happy to take any questions or comments that you may have.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for all of the work and just remind the council that we do have quite a number of folks waiting outside for the next event. And that's a lot of staff time out there. So I'm going to turn to Councillor Craddock for any questions and comments, and then any other comments from the councillors, and then ask for a resolution, motion for adoption.
Well, I just want to say congratulations. This has been two and a half years that you've been working on this, and it was excellent, the work that you did. It was really rewarding to attend some of the community events, listen to the interaction amongst the people participating in the discussion, and I thought smoothly and beautifully, and I just want to say thank you for the excellent work. This is an area that already has a lot of pent-up interest. As you mentioned, there's already trails that people have created for themselves, and I think the community is really looking forward to now coming in and reconstructing some of those trails and making it an area where everybody can walk and get through there. And having a formal entrance to the area aligned with one of the neighborhood streets is excellent. I also look forward to, as we move forward, is how do we make sure that the rest of the region is aware of this and can get access to it. There is a bus that comes up about half a mile away, but for people that don't have good ability to get around, it will still be challenging. But the community is really ready to have this, and so thank you for all that you've done to make it happen. I appreciate it. Well done.
Any questions or comments, Councillor Stacey?
I would only note and congratulate staff as well. That it clearly takes time to develop a good plan for the development of the amenities necessary to support public access. And it takes resources to build the improvements. And that's why I'm so proud to have been part of the council to vote for a third round of public support for this amazing program that's providing nature opportunities for people and providing protection of our vital natural resources and clean water. Congratulations to all.
Thanks. Anybody else? Councillor Gonzalez.
I had a question, but I think I just answered it as I was kind of like floating through one of the reports that you sent us. But I did have I can't find how big is the Gabbert Butte site acreage size. I couldn't really find that.
It's about 150 to 200 acres.
Nice. And that's significant. And so I was wondering about the site. So I'm assuming the acquisition was funded by previous funds. Is the phase one construction from the 2006 bond as well, or are we expecting the 2019 Parks and Nature referred measure to support future phases or phase one of construction?
So funding will come from a couple of different sources. We're still, putting that together at this point. We're looking forward to, post if the plan is approved to take that next step, go through budgeting, and I think really what will help us determine really what we can and can't build is that next phase of design and construction to really understand what it's going to take to put this on the ground.
Right, absolutely. Right, those are all my questions. Thank you and good work.
Councillor Lewis and then Councillor Craddock.
I'm getting the brevity face, so just cheers to all the good work, and particularly the bones of this come out of good public process, so thank you.
Thumbs up.
Councillor Craddock.
Well, I just want to make sure that Tina Osterink is recognized. Tina is a planner at City Gresham. She's participated in this from the day one, and you've been a great partner, and you're the person that's carried this, has worked with the Gresham City Council on this, and we've received their support unanimously. So I just can't thank you enough for your partnership and being there at every meeting and every open house and helping us along the way. So thank you so much. And then I also want to add, the city of Gresham in the 1970s, was it, purchased land that is adjacent to this. So this is not just Metro's property, but there's another, I don't know how many acres that are adjoining this that will eventually, when the city is able, we'll have an even a more extensive trail system. So it's really going to be quite significant opportunities for the community when all of that is open and available. And there'll be multiple entrances to the area.
Just close with thank you for taking a new approach. Thank you for kind of using it here and applying it. It looks like it's been successful. It'll be interesting to see what lessons learned are applied for future work. But I just want to say it was much appreciated. I think it reflects not only what the staff have been working on and the council prior and this council continuation of trying to figure out different ways for community engagement for not just hearing and moving on, but actually incorporating into the decision-making process a different power structure. So thank you. Much appreciated. All right, with that, do we have a motion for resolution number 19-4989 for the purpose of adopting the Gabbert Master Plan? The
resolution in front of me here.
Would you like to move? I move to approve resolution number 19-4989.
Second?
And I will second.
So moved by Councillor Gonzalez and seconded by Councillor Craddock. I'm trying to see, do we need a clerk to call the roll? Is there any further discussion? All right. The clerk can call the roll.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Yes.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Yes.
Councillor President Peterson.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Passes. Mm-hmm. And congratulations. We're going to get used to rounds of applause from up here. A lot of fun stuff. We'll move on to quick Chief Operating Officer communications.
Yes, I'll be brief. We have summer festivities in full swing. We have a star party at Glendevere this Saturday evening. The Rose City astronomers are bringing their telescopes and expert knowledge to Glendevere on July 13th. The group is going to help attendees find distant stellar objects and learn about common summer constellations. The event is free but requires registration via our website. But if the sky is covered by clouds, the event will be canceled. Another exciting news, we have our Saturday, July 13th.
13th, thank you.
Free Wednesday concerts are in swing at P5. So the 14th Annual Music on Main Summer Outdoor Concert Series began yesterday with a Dolly Parton tribute. Upcoming concerts include everything.
Still around.
She is. Upcoming concerts include everything from the Caribbean dance to Prince tribute. And you can go to that tribute, Prince tribute. The series takes place every Wednesday on Southwest Main Street between Broadway and Park Avenue from 5 to 7 p.m. All concerts are free to the public with seating available on a first-come, first-served basis. So go and enjoy our lovely grounds and festivities.
Awesome. And just want to, again, welcome Carrie McLaren. And any comments, observations? You've had a couple days on the job.
Thank you, President Peterson. Yes, I have been warmly welcomed by Metro staff, and I thank you all and the council for that. And I will be brief then, and let us move on to our next agenda items. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll expect more later.
No problems, though, please.
Everything's good. All right. Councilor Communications, anything?
I have a quick update on MPAC. From yesterday, so we had Sasha present to MPAC on resiliency, and she did an excellent job. In addition, we had a transportation technology panel. There was a great discussion, a lot of enthusiasm around Hillsborough's connection with municipal broadband and the programs that they're implementing alongside the Hillsborough School District. And, of course, thank you to Elliot Rose for supporting the panel and all the work from Metro staff to coordinate that.
Good job. Councilor Lewis.
Just a quick update. I attended my first Willamette Falls Locks Commission meeting yesterday as a official commissioner. It was their meeting number 9. Just a heads up that over the next 6 weeks, that commission will be moving at a rather quick clip towards developing legislation for the 2020 session, authorizing Willamette Falls to form a public corporation for ongoing operations and also to handle maintenance and repairs. In a concurrent conversation, working with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on making sure that the disposition memo is actually signed. It's apparently on the correct desk in Washington, D.C., but we do need our federal partners to make sure that it does get disposed of in a timely fashion so that we're ready for 2020.
Good. Councilor Stacey?
Very briefly, I joined Councilor Gonzalez at last night's Opal Voice of the People's History annual event, or nearly annual event, third or so that I've attended, and once again, a very moving presentation by current leaders from diverse backgrounds. Reading and essentially performing thoughts and words written by leaders of the past, very moving event, very well done, at the wonderful former Washington High School facility, which now has a different name, which has dropped from my mind, Revolution Hall.
Yeah, exactly. Any other council communications at this time? All right, seeing none, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Our next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, July 25th at 2 p.m. here at the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers. And I'll ask everybody to vacate the space so we can do our next meeting. So thank you, everybody.
Oh, we're moving actually into a training right now.
Into an executive session, which I was going to call when we come back.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me back. Huh? Yes.